Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most.
This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving deep, looking under the surface of, well, pretty much everything. We want to explore this invisible structure that shapes success, failure, risk, basically our whole world.
It's fascinating stuff. Did you know that the very same mathematical idea that makes the internet super fast, that same idea is also what makes global financial systems potentially catastrophically fragile?
Exactly. That's the paradox, isn't it? That's what we're trying to decode today. We're jumping into network science, looking at the hidden architecture of complex network.
And we're using the foundational work of physicist Guido Caldarelli as our main guide here. He's a real expert in this.
Yeah. I mean, we live surrounded by just staggering complexity, right? Think about pandemics, market crashes, even political polarization. And the old ways of looking at things, you know, breaking stuff down into tiny pieces, it often just fails to explain these big systemic problems. Right, you miss the forest or the trees.
Exactly. So our mission today is really to give you this essential tool for the 21st century network thinking. We want to reveal those hidden patterns, the organization underneath all this complexity.
Yeah, the goal is pretty simple, actually. It's about shifting your focus. Instead of just looking at the individual bits, people, proteins, computers, whatever, you start looking at the relationships between them.
And that shift.
Yeah.
That's the key, isn't it?
It really is. It's kind of a shortcut to understanding why systems grow or why they collapse or, you know, why they succeed.
Okay, so let's talk about the person behind this work, Guido Caldarelli. He's a distinguished Italian physicist, one of the big names in network science.
And his background is key here. He comes from theoretical physics, statistical mechanics, these fields that are all about finding simple, elegant rules to explain massive systems. Think like trillions of gas particles.
So he's trained to look for the universal laws, the underlying principles.
Exactly. He's not just zeroing in on, say, the specifics of Facebook friendships or one particular computer network. He's searching for the mathematical language that works across the board.
So the same rules might apply to how genes interact, how traffic flows, and how the stock market behaves.
That's the idea. And what's really cool is he's not just a theorist locked away somewhere.
Right.
He's known for bridging that heavy math with real-world application. He's actually worked with governments, with financial institutions, applying network analysis to really high-stakes problems.
So these aren't just abstract models. They actually have predictive power out there in the messy real world.
Precisely. That combination of rigor and practical use makes his insights so valuable.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's get to the core idea. What's the central thesis Caldarelli really wants us to grasp about complexity?
The absolute main point is that networks, whether it's your social circle, the power grid, the financial system, they are the fundamental architecture. They're the scaffolding that makes complex systems possible in the first place.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit for everyone listening, because this feels like the big takeaway. The identity of the pieces, the nodes, matters less than the pattern of how they're connected.
Exactly. You could have 1,000 brilliant people, but how they're wired together, that's what determines how the organization functions.
Topology is destiny, you could say.
That's a great way to put it. The wiring diagram, the topology, dictates how the system behaves, how resilient it is, everything. Network science gives us the tools, the math, to understand these emergent properties.
Things you just can't see by looking at one piece at a time.
Right. It's about the collective behavior.
So the book walks us through this history, right? Starting way back. The basic building blocks are simple enough. Nodes and edges.
Nodes are the things, edges are the links between them. And yeah, the whole field kind of started with a walk. In the 18th century, Leonhard Euler solved this puzzle about the Königsberg bridges.
Oh yeah, I remember this. Could you cross all 7 bridges just once and end up back where you started?
That's the one. And Euler figured it out by abstracting it. He drew the land masses as nodes and the bridges as edges, showed you could analyze connectivity mathematically. That was way back in 1736.
Amazing. And fast forward a couple of centuries, scientists stumbled onto something called the small world phenomenon. Most people know it as 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, right. That idea from Milgram's experiments in the 60s. But the how is fascinating. How do you get such short paths across huge networks?
Yeah, how does that work mathematically?
Well, that's where the Watt-Strogatz model comes in. It showed that for a network to have this small world property, you need two things that seem kind of opposite.
Okay.
You need high local clustering, like your close friends probably know each other, right? It's a tight-knit local group.
Uh-huh, excellent.
But you also need just a few random long-range links sprinkled in, these shortcuts or weak ties that connect distant parts of the network.
Ah, the weak ties. This leads to that really counterintuitive idea, the strength of weak ties. We tend to focus on our close friends, our strong ties.
Of course. But Caldarelli points out, and Granovetter before him, that those distant acquaintances, the people you barely know, they're often the source of the most valuable new information or opportunities.
Why is that?
Because they connect you to different worlds. Your close friends, they likely know the same people and hear the same stuff you do. It's redundant information.
Right.
But that weak tie, that person you met once at a conference, they're a bridge to a whole different cluster of people and ideas. They bridge what network scientists call structural holes.
That's a really powerful concept for networking, for careers.
Absolutely. But things get even more interesting and maybe a bit unsettling with the next big discovery, scale-free networks.
Okay, so if small world networks are kind of democratic in their connections, scale-free is different.
Very different. Think aristocratic, not democratic. Most real-world networks, the internet structure, who cites whom in academic papers, even how wealth is distributed, they don't follow a nice, predictable bell curve.
No average number of connections.
Not really. Instead, they follow something called a power law.
Okay, break that down. What does a power law mean in practice?
It means extreme differences. You have a tiny number of nodes, these super connected hubs, that grab a massive, totally disproportionate share of all the connections.
Like Google for websites or O'Hare Airport for flights.
Exactly. And then you have the vast majority of nodes with very few connections. It's a huge inequality in how connected things are.
Is this linked to that Pareto 80-20 rule? Like 20% of the nodes having 80% of the links?
It's very much related, yeah. It reflects that same kind of unequal distribution.
Uh-huh.
And Caldarelli explains the mechanism behind it, preferential attachment.
Preferential attachment. Sounds like what it is.
Pretty much. As the network grows, new nodes don't connect randomly. They are far, far more likely to connect to nodes that are already popular, already well-connected.
The rich get richer.
That's the dynamic. Success breeds success. Popular websites attract more links, making them even more popular. It creates the snowball effect, ensuring the hubs keep growing their dominance.
Now, on the surface, this sounds super efficient, right? Having these big hubs means information or whatever can zip across the network really fast.
It is efficient in that sense. But Caldarelli highlights a critical trade-off, a structural paradox.
Okay, what's the paradox?
Well, these scale-free networks are incredibly robust against random failures.
Meaning?
If some random, unimportant node goes offline, a small website, a minor router, the network barely flinches. Traffic just reroutes through the big hubs. No big deal.
Okay, sounds good so far. So where's the catch? Where's the vulnerability?
The vulnerability comes from that very same centralization. Because everything relies on those few major hubs, these networks are critically vulnerable to targeted attacks on those hubs.
Ah, so taking out a random node does nothing, but taking out a hub
can be catastrophic.
Think
about taking down a major internet backbone provider or the central switching station for a power grid. If you hit a key hub, you can disconnect huge chunks of the network, causing cascading failures throughout the whole system.
It's that classic efficiency versus resilience trade-off. Centralize for speed, but create a massive single point of failure.
You got it. And we see this play out online, but the stakes get terrifyingly high when the same structure exists in the global financial system.
Well, let's talk about the 2008 crisis through this lens. This seems like the ultimate example of that structural paradox.
Absolutely. Caldarelli treats the financial world as a massive network. Banks, investment firms, they're the nodes. Loans, derivatives, all those complex trades, those are the edges, the connections.
And before 2008, the standard way to look at risk was just checking individual banks, right? Is this bank healthy? Does it have enough capital?
Yeah, they focused on the individual nodes, not the connections. They missed the structural risk. What happened was that the big financial institutions became incredibly interconnected hubs. Everyone was trading with everyone, holding bits of each other's debt.
Creating a dense web of connections.
A very dense web. So when the problem started in one area, the U.S. housing market, it wasn't just a local issue. Because key hubs like Lehman Brothers were so central, their failure sent shockwaves through the entire system.
It wasn't just about bad mortgages anymore. It was the connections that spread the damage globally.
Exactly. The high connectivity, which people thought was good for efficiency and liquidity, actually turned a localized shock into a global meltdown. Caldarelli makes the point that the system didn't just fail because of a few bad decisions or bad assets. It failed because of its inherent networked structure.
A classic network failure. That really does change how you have to think about risk. It's not just the quality of the parts, it's the map of how they're linked.
Definitely. And that leads us really nicely into the big overarching themes that come out of Caldarelli's work. The first one is just mind-blowing, the universality of principles.
Yeah, this is the one that got me too. The idea that the same basic math, like power laws, can describe how friendships form, how proteins interact in a cell, and how markets behave. It's kind of wild.
It gives you this unified way of looking at complexity no matter where it pops up.
Okay, what's the second big theme?
The second one we've touched on a lot. Topology is destiny. The structure, that map of connections, is what truly dictates how the system works, how resilient it is, how things spread through it.
Changing the wiring changes everything, maybe more than improving the individual pieces.
Often, yes. Think about traffic flow in a city. You can give everyone faster cars, but if the road network itself is badly designed, you'll still have gridlock. The structure limits the function.
Makes sense. Like my example of water pipes, great pipes in a bad layout don't work.
Precisely. And the third big theme is emergence and collective behavior.
Ah, the idea that the whole is more than the sum of its parts.
Exactly. Complex system-wide stuff like a market crash, a flock of birds moving as one, maybe even consciousness itself. These things emerge from the interactions between the parts. You can't understand them just by dissecting the individual components.
You need that systems view, that network perspective.
You absolutely do. Reductionism doesn't cut it for these kinds of phenomena.
Caldarelli is really good at boiling this complex science down into memorable takeaways. Let's highlight a few key ideas, almost like quotes to remember.
Okay. Well, the foundational one has to be, networks are the fundamental architecture that makes complex systems possible. They're not just descriptive, they're constitutive. They make the complexity happen.
I really like the one about weak ties. The strength of weak ties reveals one of the most counterintuitive insights. Our most distant connections often provide our most valuable opportunities. That just flips typical networking advice on its head.
It really does. And then there's that crucial warning, the structural paradox. The very architecture that makes our interconnected systems efficient and resilient to random accidents is the same architecture that makes them fragile and vulnerable to coordinated attacks or the failure of a single key player.
That sums up the double-edged sword perfectly. And it takes us out of the realm of pure theory and puts it right into our daily lives, doesn't it? How can we actually use this network thinking?
Okay, let's get practical. For your career, think about your professional world as a network. Where are the gaps? Where are the disconnected groups?
The structural holes.
Exactly. If you can position yourself to bridge those holes, maybe you're the person who connects the tech team with the sales team. You become a broker of unique information. That's incredibly valuable.
That makes a lot of sense. What about just navigating the world, like online information?
Well, understanding homophily, our tendency to connect with people like ourselves, is key. We know this creates echo chambers, right?
Yeah, definitely see that on social media.
So consciously using network thinking means actively seeking out diverse connections, different information sources. It helps you break out of that bubble and, frankly, improves your judgment.
Good point. And we see applications in public health, too.
Huge ones. Epidemiology relies heavily on network science. Identifying super spreaders, those are the hubs in a disease network, allows for targeted interventions like vaccination or quarantine. It's way more effective than just blanket measures.
Focusing efforts where the connectivity is highest.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. And businesses can use this.
Absolutely. Mapping out your supply chain as a network can reveal critical single points of failure. Maybe one supplier is a hub that everything depends on. Same for internal teams or IT infrastructure.
Find the hubs, then build in some redundancy or backup.
That's the strategy. It's about building resilience by understanding the network structure. All these examples show that network literacy isn't just academic. It leads to better decisions, better strategies.
Thinking back on all this, what really surprised me, I think, was that universality piece. How something as personal as my friendships follows similar mathematical rules to, like, the internet. The predictive power is just, stunning.
For me, the most valuable takeaway for you, the listener, is probably this. Your position within the network often matters more for outcomes and opportunities than your individual attributes alone.
Wow. Say that again. Position matters more than individual quality.
In many complex systems, yes. Being well-connected or bridging the right gaps can outweigh being slightly better in isolation but poorly positioned. Success in this century really demands structural thinking, not just individual effort.
So here's a final thought to leave everyone with. If connections create both risk and opportunity, how can you consciously redesign just one small network in your life?
Yeah, maybe it's your team at work. Maybe it's where you get your news. Maybe it's your supply chain if you run a business.
How can you tweak that network structure to make it more robust, more resilient, while still keeping it effective and efficient?
That's the practical challenge, isn't it? Applying network literacy to your own world.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.